Hello, hello, hello. I'm your Iris Chacon, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz, and welcome to In Yo Mouth.
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood to lick it right, lick it good, show you how to look.
Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets. So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo Mouth.
I got the goosebumps.
Hey there and welcome back, folks. Once again, I'm your hostess with the mostest, Munoz, and I am super duper excited today because I have a very, very, very special guest with me. The one, the only, the very sexy Gabe Gonzalez is on the pod. Say hi, Gabe.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to have you here. So thank you for
giving
me some time out of your very, very busy schedule.
It's not that busy. I'm just really frantic about it. You know.
Folks out there, Gabe Gonzalez is a Puerto Rican comedian and writer. He's been seen on Comedy Central's Inside Amy Schumer, MTV's Decoded, and the HBO Latino documentary Habla y Vota. He also hosts videos for Mike, Flama, and Remezcla, and he's now the host of Need to Know on MTV News and Scruff Hosting, all like drooled over your phones out there, I'm sure, at him. Just to like drop a few places where Gabe works. I have like gay royalty in the house. Gay royalty. How are you, Gabe?
I'm doing great. I've got a much bigger head after that intro.
Oh, yes.
It's good. We're meeting on a very rainy day in New York, but it's nice to be here.
I know. Yeah. And happy National Have a Bagel Day.
Shut up, for real?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I usually have a bagel every morning.
Do you?
The one day I should have, I did not.
No. If you were a bagel, what kind of bagel would you be?
Oh, my God. I love poppy seed, so I feel like I'm channeling poppy seed because it's my go-to.
Yeah.
I might be that really obnoxious rainbow bagel, though, if we're being honest.
Oh,
you know what I mean? There's no difference in flavor, but I look...
No, they're like extra chewy and stale, I find. I'm not, I don't like that for you. You
know? That's a really good point. That's very good.
That's not how I envision you.
Do you want to know what I used to order when I was like a little like closeted twink in high school?
Yes.
I would get Einstein Brothers bagels, and I would get a poppy seed bagel toasted, hollowed out because God forbid I had too many carbohydrates. And then I would put hummus in it, and then I would get home and I would cut up avocado. And I would make a sandwich out of that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. Que fancy.
I know. Tu sabes bien refined, you know.
Meanwhile, here I am. You know those handy snacks, cheese and crackers?
Oh, my God. I fucking love those. Are you kidding? Right?
So there was always way too much cheese for the crackers. So I would take chocolate chip cookies, like Chips Ahoy.
Stop.
And spread the cheese. Who knew that I was making like a charcuterie plate at like age 8?
Like, what a complex flavor palette. Truly. Truly a trendsetter. That's amazing.
I was obsessed. Right now, I'm going to take you into something I call This Day in Gay History because I think it's really important on the pod to call on the voices of the ancestors of the past so we don't relive things that have happened to us in the past.
Oh, I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
It's this thing that I've been doing since I've taken over the pod, and I love it because I've given myself an education. And I think the listeners really like it out there, too, because it's just, you know, things you didn't know. And so on this day in your gay history, in 1973, gay activist Mark Allen Siegel interrupts a live broadcast of the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite by holding up a sign that reads, "Gays protest CBS prejudice."
Ooh, what was that about? What's the story behind that?
Apparently, the news cycle was just really silent on all the gay lib movement. And this was the gay rebels.
Oh, I love that.
And so it was all over the news because people were angry that... the gay lib movement wasn't getting any traction or any action. And the news was covering like all sorts of other events and big things were happening and no one was talking about it. And so Mark pretended he was a newsman, like a, why is the word?
Oh my God.
A journalist.
Yeah.
So dumb. He pretended he was a journalist, got into the live recording and stood up and did that. What happened after that, because I found this really super interesting, is that Walter Cronkite, because they had to go to court, they sued him and whatnot.
Oh, wow.
But Walter Cronkite kind of took him under his wing and started reporting because of this. And Walter Cronkite has always been like a supporter of the LGBT people.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know all that. That's a really cool story. That's wild. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get into it, folks. I invited Gabe here to talk mainly about like Puerto Rican Christmas. Feliz Navidad. Because we're all about the pasteles and the coquito this year. But first, I want to get to know Gabe a little bit more. I want you out there to get to know Gabe a little bit more, because as I did my research, and there's a lot of research to be done, but no dick pics, unfortunately.
They're under lock and key, ma'am.
I can't find them anywhere. We have a lot in common. Where did you grow up? Let's let the children know.
So I grew up in Central Florida. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Orlando. My mom moved to Tampa when she was 12.
Yeah.
And my dad moved to Central Florida for college, and that's where they met. So they both grew up in Puerto Rico. My mom, since I graduated high school, moved back to Puerto Rico, and then she moved back to Tampa. But born and raised in a little town like right outside Orlando called Oviedo, Florida. Right. We're famous for a chicken crossing that happens right in front of a Popeyes. There are like a lot of feral chickens.
Okay.
So there is a chicken crossing sign literally in front of a Popeyes in what is called downtown Oviedo, which is like a Baptist church, a Popeyes, and a hardware store.
All right.
And so that is our very morbid claim to fame, that the chickens hang out outside the Popeyes. Now I go back to Tampa, Florida for holidays to visit my grandma, all my aunts and uncles, my mom. They all live down there now.
Yeah, are you big into Christmas? Some people aren't.
So my mom loved making a thing out of it, and I was always a very contrarian and overly inquisitive child. So like I used to look for gifts because like I knew Santa Claus wasn't real. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh really?
5 years old, I was like, no. I will uncover this lie. Like I was trying to be a little investigator, and I remember my mom tells me this. I don't remember the story. Apparently, one year, my mom bought gift wrapping paper with me in the shopping cart with her. I was like 4 or 5 years old. Maybe I was walking next to her. I don't know. I was probably, bigger at this point. But apparently on Christmas morning, the gifts were all laid out in front of the tree. And I was like, Mom, Santa Claus uses the same like wrapping paper you do. And so she panicked because she thought she had like finally, you know what I mean, fucked up the lie and the magic of it all. So she said she stopped wrapping gifts after that because I was like too much of a dick about trying to prove that Santa Claus didn't exist. But I love it. That's the thing. Like my mom, every year I remember she would collect bottles of rum and then like clean them off, take off the tags, wash them, and fill them up with coquito and wrap them in these like giant bows she would buy at Michael's.
Yes, wait, does she sell them?
Well, no, she wouldn't even sell them. She would make them for family. And then the thing was, like, paying for the shipping because she would send them to Puerto Rico, to Texas, to Tampa. But, like, our kitchen was full of bottles of coquito. There was a whole section of our fridge where my mom was like, don't put anything there. Don't fuck with that space. That's my coquito space.
Yes.
And I was like, damn,
yes,
all right.
Yes,
like,
yes. Oh, my God. This is really, really incredible. And when I approached you about coming on the pod months ago, just to talk and then most recently talk about Christmas in Puerto Rico and Puerto Rican Christmas, and then doing research about like just the way you about you, and then finding out the way you relate to your heritage. Mm-hmm. This is what we have a lot in common about growing up and kind of holding on to the whiteness. I saw that interview on that you did on, there was a big pink background. It's on YouTube.
Oh, sure. Oh, I think that was Other Boys. It was a very cool interview series.
It was a really cool interview series. But I think that really made this episode, or is making this episode, extra special for me, just because you and I are very, very similar in this way, and just relating to our heritage and then letting the people know out there just like how we celebrate and Puerto Rican Christmas, because Puerto Rico is part of America, people.
For better or worse,
for
it
better
is.
Or worse,
we can talk about changing that in another episode.
Yes, and I can't tell you how many times I've been asked when I got my green card.
Oh my God,
legit.
People used to ask if they needed a passport to come to Puerto Rico. I invited some friends in college to come, and a couple of them were like, "Oh, I have to renew my passport," and I was like, you're good. Like, Puerto Rico is technically a colony of the United States, and you don't need a passport to get there. It's great. Like, yeah.
No, this woman the other day asked me where I was from, and I knew what she was getting at.
Of course,
I
always.
Knew what she, so I said, I'm from Brooklyn, because I'm born and raised in Brooklyn.
Yeah, there you go.
And she goes, no, but where are you from? And I go, Brooklyn. I'm from New York. And she goes, well, where are your parents from? And I go, well, my mother was born in Brooklyn. That's where... From? No. Your parents. Where are your people from? I go, Puerto Rico. She goes, oh, I knew you weren't from here. And then I had to give her an education about how we've been American since 1917.
Of course. It's wild. Yeah.
So this is just really interesting and just like super, super special. But back to the coquito for a minute. We're going to bounce around a minute. How does your mother make this coquito? Because there's varying ways. And do you like your mother's coquito?
I like my mom's coquito. It comes from my grandma's recipe, which my mother... does not share with people. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there is a version made with egg and there is a version made without egg in it.
Oh, I do not know a version.
Right. Or maybe it's not egg. It was something. What was it? There was like some weird element where like someone in my family made an eggnoggy kind of version and then somebody else made coquito and there was like a scandal. It was just like really funny. It was like the dueling coquitos and someone was like, this tastes weird, what's in it, blah, blah, blah. My grandma lessens the amount of condensed milk in it because she thinks it's a little too sweet. She does put, I think, a little coconut-flavored rum in it as which is weird. What kind of
Now, this is... a contention between Puerto Ricans across the world.
Well, it's like the go-to is Bacardi, right? Like the go-to is always the Bacardi rum in my house.
151.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, for real.
Yes. So folks That's out potent. There, in your mouth listeners, for those of you who don't know what coquito is, coquito is Puerto Rican eggnog at its basis. So there you go. And talk to any Puerto Rican. For the most part, every Puerto Rican will be like, my mother's coquito is the best coquito. So... but my mother's coquito is the best coquito. Real coconuts or coconut from the can?
Oh, see, yeah. Okay, so here is the thing. There was a fight. So my grandma does not put – it's coconut milk. Uh-huh. That's what I got wrong. It's not coconut rum. It's coconut milk. So my grandma increases the coconut milk and decreases the condensed milk. But she also takes out the eggs, right? Uh-huh. So it's like how do you kind of like make it more viscous and how do you keep that like thick coquito thing without the egg yolk? And I don't know what she does. Something about the way she like mixes it together or makes it happen is really intense. But that's the thing. So 1 year someone brought coquito with egg in it and nobody in my family liked it. And apparently that's like traditionally how it's made. But my grandma leans toward sweet but not too sweet with that little kick in it, right? Yeah. My mom would always lessen the amount of rum. My mom did not like a boozy coquito. My grandma does.
I was
partial to my grandma's coquito. I would wait until we would go to her apartment. I was just like, I didn't have the heart to tell my mom. But I, you know what I mean? Coquito is also not for everybody. It's very interesting. It's like some relatives love it. Some folks hate it.
Canned coconut or real coconut?
Oh my God. Okay. So it was always kind of like the canned coconut milk when you're preparing it for like the group en masse. But there was 1 year I went to Puerto Rico and we like fully had a Christmas on a farm, where we like, somebody was like cooking a lechon outside, al aire libre. Like it had been, you know, like marinating for days. It was cooking for hours. They put its head on a stick and took it down the mountain. Yeah. But at that same Christmas, somebody had made coquito using like fresh coconut milk, which was really wild.
Have you never had
all fresh ingredients, like eggs from the farm? It was nuts.
The only way I know how to make it.
Oh my God.
So every year in my mother's backyard in Brooklyn, we get coconuts, the brown coconuts.
Yeah.
And we sit there. I sit there with the hatchet, and you have to break it open.
Of course.
And you pour out the milk, the water, into a cup because you need to taste it. Because if you buy 10 coconuts, maybe like 4 of those coconuts are going to be good. And I never understood it till someone took me through it. And then when you taste the good coconut water, and then you have to pull the meat out too. It's a entire day process.
I love it.
And then it all gets blended together and then through a cheesecloth and then this whole thing. And people die for my mother's coquito.
Oh my God, I must try. I love trying everyone's coquitos.
If you're lucky, I'll bring you some because let me tell you, she was complaining to me today actually that we're not going to have time to make it. And even 1 year, my best friend Michael had to ship me coconuts from Florida because we couldn't find coconuts here.
Shut up. Are you serious?
$120 for like shipping coconut.
Oh my God, I love that.
Isn't
that
crazy?
So wild. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it.
That's one of my favorite parts of going back to Puerto Rico, where people are just like fucking chopping coconuts in half, selling it on the side of the street. Like,
yeah, did you ever live there?
No. I remember there was one summer I spent with my mom there a little while. Like, my sister was living with my mom out there after I graduated high school. But I've never actually lived there. And it's been this really wild thing where it's like, I don't know, being a part of the diaspora, you sort of like feel that pull and you feel the solidarity with the community there. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I do realize that my upbringing was different and I grew up with certain privileges that are offered to people that live in the States that Puerto Ricans don't have. And so it's interesting because it feels like home whenever I go, right? Like, that it's like my heritage, but there is always a little part of me that feels a little bit like an outsider because I haven't had to live through what it is to be on the island day to day, right?
Exactly.
And so, like,
yes.
It feels so familiar, but at the same time, it is really jarring to remind myself that, like, I don't really know what's going on there day to day, right? Yeah. And that's why I think it's so important, like, I don't know, even in journalism or forms of storytelling to, like, you know, I feel like this was especially important during Hurricane Maria or when you're talking about the financial crisis on the island, not to like just send journalists to observe as outsiders, but to speak to Puerto Ricans themselves, right? Like, not the people who are part of La Junta, not the politicians, like the people on the ground who are living through it day to day. And so, I don't know, that to me has been such an interesting kind of push and pull. But the Christmases where we do go back to Puerto Rico are so much fun. It's just a fully different vibe, like parranda, staying up late, drunk, screaming about, like, literally last time I was in Puerto Rico was Christmas, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago. It was right before the hurricane. So I think it might have been Christmas of 2016. I stayed up with my Aunt Diana until like 4 a.m. talking about like Freddie Mercury because the Queen movie was coming out. People were writing about it.
Yeah.
We were getting drunk on rum. Like, she was wrapping gifts. And it's just like, it is so unlike, even in Tampa with all my Puerto Rican family, there's just something about the vibe in Puerto Rico that like really makes Christmas feel different.
It's so interesting because we're so similar. It's so crazy. One of my best friends, Cedric, calls me a coconut. Uh-huh. Brown on the outside, white on the inside. Because, you know, my mother took out loans for me to go to Catholic school here in the city. Like, full out loans.
Yeah.
Like, that I just finished paying off, you know? Just loans everywhere, and to go to private school, mm-hmm. For high school and whatnot. And so I remember a very specific moment, and you mentioned the diaspora, that I was actually working with the U.S. Postal Service right after Hurricane Maria.
Oh, wow.
Because they do something called Operation Santa, which is actually not that I was planning on talking about that today, but Operation Santa is over 100 years old. The post office collects letters from kids in needy areas, and you can go to the post office and fill those letters.
Oh, wow.
And act like Santa. So Hurricane Maria year, I was hell-bent on, because I had been doing it so long, participating in this program, in getting the post office to send gifts to the kids of the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. Oh,
that's fantastic.
And it worked.
That's so cool.
I had to yell and scream and contact everybody. But then all of a sudden, I was doing a press circuit for them. And I was here for it. I was like, yes, put me on all the televisions. Make me your spokesperson. I will be the face for this. I don't care. Let's just make it happen, whatever way we need. And I got really nervous because I have a big musical theater background, and for as much as I've been on screen or on stage, speaking Spanish on screen is a completely different ball game.
Totally.
And then all of these news people in Spanish from Univision and Telemundo and everything are coming at me, and fast, quick lightning, and you have to think really fast. And my friend Cedric was with me, and he grabbed me and he goes, "You're doing great." He goes, "I need you to remember that you are a product of the diaspora," mm-hmm. right? And there's something beautiful in that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to like Spanglish it out,
he
goes, "Do it, because you are who you are and you are a specific product of this thing." And he goes, "Which is important."
Mm-hmm. And there's no shame in that.
Yes.
It's like, that's a thing to it is important to maybe understand the forces at work that have discouraged Latinos from passing on Spanish or learning Spanish in the States.
Yeah.
But I don't think, like, you know what I mean? That is a product of like colonialism and racism over many years. That's not your fault, right?
No. We grew up not answering back in Spanish because we weren't supposed to have accents.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't want to have an accent.
Right,
my mother's white presenting too. She has blue contacts and she's very fair skinned and whatnot. But she would speak to us in Spanish, and she speaks speaks English very well as well.
Yeah.
But still, there was no requirement to answer back in Spanish because, you know, it was like, no.
Yeah.
So I find the pull back to the island, to the heritage, is more so than ever. And I have, like, great people around me, like my friend Cedric, who, like, kind of ignited that flame in me to want that and to embrace that more and to feel how special that is. And, you know, as opposed to, like, push it away for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's, like, it is a product of your upbringing and your heritage. And, you know, however that manifests, it's, like, I think what's important is putting the effort into connecting to that and trying, right? It's like, I think we see something similar with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, where it's like, I think people were hypercritical of her at first because they were like, oh, she barely speaks Spanish. And I think she is, you know, like with me, for example, I grew up with Spanish as my first language. I spoke Spanish at home. That's it until the age of 5. Then you go into the public school system and they like want to throw you into an ESOL class, even though I had mastery of both because Spanish was primary. And then that became kind of like a weird sort of shame thing. And I kept taking Spanish in high school, but it is interesting because my vocabulary sort of plateaus, right? Like I can have a very basic everyday conversation with somebody, but when it comes to talking about complex ideas surrounding queer identity or politics, like I've never had to use that type of Spanish, right? Yeah. Like that's not something I learned at home. It is not something I pursued in college. And so it is interesting because now I want to tackle these topics that do intersect with my heritage and the language that I learned first. But I haven't been talking about those things in Spanish, right? So it's like, I don't know, even thinking of how to translate the word queer, how to talk about safe sex and HIV in Spanish has been trying to – it's like it's learning a new aspect of the language. It's a new vocabulary that I never had exposure to. And, you know, that's for a number of reasons. Machismo, hiding my identity, living in the States, like whatever, right? The important thing is that we're putting the work into learning and trying to bridge that language gap that exists among different people in our community.
Yeah, that's it's so complicated and so layered and and even the shame that came with. It's like in high school, I went to an all boys high school, all the cool kids were white.
Yeah.
And I was tormented. And they were from Rockaway. Mm-hmm. And Rockaway back in the day wasn't nice. Mm-hmm. Those were very poor families and those weren't like, you know, it's very trailer park the Rockaways were, you know?
Yeah.
What I mean? And so, but I would come home and tell my mother I'd want to be from the Rockaways all the time when she would want me to dance salsa with her and this and that. And she didn't understand that it was like me trying to hide my identity, you know, because I didn't want to be this thing.
Yeah.
Right? Plus, I was tormented and bullied and that whole thing. Ugh, whatever. It's so heavy. On this, a very Puerto Rican Christmas episode.
Yes, we love.
Don't worry, I've hired a paranda. They'll be here any minute, right?
I can't wait.
Oh, my God. So talk to me about, like, favorite foods. Because at its essence, this podcast, yes, is a food podcast. But, you know, I always want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets.
Oh, my God.
And we have to celebrate our queer brothers and sisters, especially of color. And I love that you and I just have so much in common in that aspect. But let's get on to the food. Favorite Christmas food, hands down, must have.
Okay, so this used to be a more Christmas tradition with my grandmother on my dad's side, who has since passed away. But anytime the family came together, mostly like Thanksgiving or Christmas, she would make sorullitos. Have you had those?
Yes,
sorullitos de maíz.
Yeah. I haven't had those in forever. And you eat them with mayo ketchup.
So good. With mayo ketchup. Yes.
Heinz, you can't have that one, Heinz.
No, Heinz. No, ma'am. Heinz. I don't think so. But it was such a go-to. It was like she would just make plates and plates and plates of it. You know what I mean? Like while the turkey was in the oven.
We need to explain to the kids out there what sorullitos are.
Yeah.
But they're like these like cigar-shaped corn fried things. It's almost like fried cornbread.
Yeah, kind of. You basically make sort of like cornmeal dough-ish type thing.
And then they get fried.
And you fry it. And she would put cheese in the middle. So she would like lay them flat, put cheese, and then roll them.
Yes.
And so they come out looking kind of like little fried witch's fingers. And they taste so good.
Yeah,
they're amazing.
Just fried corn.
Yeah, it's like that's like true. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's that. Because so much Puerto Rican food is fried, too. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I feel like you think of comida criolla and so much of it is like you know, like fried things or like things thrown into rice and like cooked in like this, you know, it's, I don't
know. Everything has meat.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. A go-to. It is really funny because I was, so I was actually online today and I was responding to one of my friends, Julio Ricardo Varela. He's a co-host of Latino USA. And he had tweeted, he was like, I don't do coquito. I'd rather just drink the rum. I've tried. I can't handle it. And then everybody, like, you know, a bunch of other Puerto Ricans were like, oh, my God, how could you? Natalia Rodmed, who used to write for Latino Rebels and is going to Columbia J School right now. Andrea Gonzalez, who covered some great stuff through Refinery 29 about, like, violence against women in Puerto Rico and the response to Hurricane Maria. Like, all these journalists being like, okay, well, I'm dragging you for coquito, but... And then I think Natalia was like, I don't like aguacate. I don't like... She's like, I like guac, but I do not like avocados. And then she was like, what is your secret? And then I told them that I don't like maduros, amarillitos.
That was one of the questions. Yeah. Are you a tostones or a maduros?
Honey, I am tostones through and through. I need savory plantains. Nice. If you let them get overripe and you're cutting that shit up and you're frying it, I'm getting these sweet, like
mushy.
I can't do that.
So out there, folks, because we just have to over-explain to the audience.
Please,
The 70 people that live in China that listen.
Yes, I love. Right?
So tostones are fried plantains, mm-hmm. right? They're twice fried, mm-hmm. right? You fry them once, you smash them, you fry them again. And they taste like potato chips. They're delicious.
Yeah, they're right? amazing.
Amazing. Maduros are sweet fried plantains. Mm-hmm. Also good, but not as good, in my opinion, either.
And they're like the thing... Okay, so the thing with tostones is that you kind of, like, flatten them, mm-hmm. and they come out, like, kind of, like, almost like, you know, like a little flat chip. You know what I mean? It's not, like, a chip itself, but they're flat. With maduros, I feel like they come in, like, I don't know, these weird little chunks that kind of have the consistency of, like, Jello. Sometimes it's
good.
Maybe...
But they're really sweet... But then you eat them with ketchup.
Yeah, it's very strange. I don't like the mix of savory and sweet. Maybe Jell-O is like making them seem a little too jiggly. I don't know. It is not my jam. And then finally, Andrea Gonzalez posted on that thread. She goes, not every meal needs to come with arroz. And I was like, damn, that's the one that would shake my grandmother to her core.
Oh, no. I love rice. I have a love affair.
Everything with rice.
I have a love affair with rice.
Do you do pegao? Did you do that in your house?
Yes, yeah. And I didn't like it.
Really? You didn't like pegao?
No.
I go,
oh my God, that may be my one thing.
That's your thing, because I go out of my way to make pegao every time I make rice. Oh my God.
So pegao, for you out there, is the burnt rice on the bottom when you make rice. And so in paella, it's called socorrat. And it's just burnt, crispy rice, but it doesn't taste burnt.
It doesn't. The idea is to not burn it. Like, it shouldn't come out black. It should be a dark brown, maybe with a few, like, black-ish spots.
Yeah.
But the idea is that it comes out crispy. And I think this is a culinary phenomenon across several cultures, as you mentioned. I remember, I think Samin Nosrat mentioned it in her Netflix special as well, that her mom used to make, like, a kind of crispy rice. And I was like, that's pegao! But, like, he called something else.
Chrissy Teigen, too, was talking about it not that long ago.
I love her.
As well.
I love
her.
Pegao is just, it's a go-to... you know, I've tried different methods. I've tried putting a little extra oil in the pan, or, you know, in the pan at the bottom. I've tried putting butter in before I throw everything in.
Butter? Blasphemy.
I know. Well, just like a little tiny layer at the bottom so that it really, you know what I mean?
Blasphemy.
Well, because it takes a while, you know? You got to be very careful with the heat. You don't want to overcook the rice, but you want to make sure the bottom gets crispy efficiently. So I was like, all right, what are some elements I can introduce to, like, get that bottom cooking and staying nice and crisp? But yeah,
listen, because that's how we like our bottoms. Nice and crisp.
Get a little crackle on that bottom. Want to hear that snap?
Yes. And with that, I think right now is a good time to introduce Gabe to my favorite part and your favorite part of the pod, y'all, because I'm here for this pig out conversation. We'll be back to it. But now's the best time for food news. Update!
Food news.
Food news.
Ooh, honey, you ain't ready, girl. Spill the tea.
News update.
Qdoba is selling a queso-scented candle that's a great stocking stuffer for the cheese lover in your life. You should see Gabe's face.
I'm sorry. I didn't know if I could interrupt that headline, but that's the most disgusting Caucasian thing I've ever heard of. That is truly horrific. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Thank you, Delish.com, where I get all my food news. That's one of my goals. I want to be a food news anchor.
Oh my God, I would love that. Honestly, I would love to watch a food news program. That'd like, be so
that's
dope.
It. All your boop 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 boop.
Yeah.
Right. Me with my glasses, boom, boom, boom.
Of
boom.
Course. And then you gotta bring the queso candle in to try, you know what I mean? God damn,
yes.
That's horrific.
So the candle is inspired by Qdoba's signature three cheese creamy queso.
God, Qdoba too. It's like not even. Oh, their queso is so bad. Oh my God.
Is okay. It? I don't think I've ever had Qdoba. I thought it was Qdoba.
Oh, no. I've
tomato been, tomato.
I went to it once. There was one in Chicago I went to, and there was one in Florida I went to, and you know I've only ever gone with gringos, so they're always like Qdoba, and I was like, all right, let's hit the Qdoba. All
right, great.
But their queso truly is the most watery, disgusting. It's a little too creamy.
Yeah,
it's like erring a little too heavily on the creamy side.
I wouldn't know, but I mean,
I'm sad I do.
Yeah, I mean. What more is there to say about this? These candles are on sale for a limited time and only cost $10 from Qdoba's website. Qdoba's not a sponsor.
No, thankfully,
But I take their money if they want it.
I was like, damn, yeah, I'll retract everything if you want to take that Qdoba money. But...
Wait, but what if you walked into someone's house, like someone's apartment? Like, let's say you were going to hook up with somebody and they like lit the candles and it was like queso.
I like to think I would have better judgment than that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I could like smell a queso candle owner before I ever got to their home. You know what I'm saying?
Wait, but you work for Scruff. Hold on a second.
Yes.
Not because we're talking about hooking up. You work for Scruff. Do you use the app? Are you single?
So I do use the app, but I have a boyfriend. And so it's like very interesting to sort of use the app mostly for work. It's very funny, but you know, like I love being flirty. I love talking to people on there. I think it's a lot of fun.
Pics.
Yeah, my boyfriend lives far away too, and so it's like, you know, it's he has. I encouraged him to download Scruff to watch a show, which I thought was really cute.
Yeah.
But like honestly, I've been. I think even if I weren't dating somebody right now, I would be pretty like sexually dormant. Like it's. I don't know. I've thrown myself into work so much, and it's like. I don't know.
Who has the time? You know?
Yeah.
You do 8 million things, and then the next thing you need to do is sit on an app for an hour to try to...
I know, right? I'm like, you could use your time... I don't know.
Not that I don't do it, but...
Yeah. Well, no, truly, I think it's like... It's an ebb and flow, right? You have to find like a healthy balance.
It is.
But I don't know. It's cute. It's really fun. I like seeing some of the changes that are happening at Scruff. Yeah. I like doing the quiz show. It's really great to hear feedback
about
the quiz show.
Listen, they pay the bills, honey. They keep the lights on.
Honestly,
but that's what I was getting at, though. You're on Scruff. Scruff and it's like broop, or whatever sound.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, that's the grinder sound, honey. No,
Or it goes bup bup bup.
I
don't even know. And you walk into someone's house and they have these like Qdoba candles lit.
Oh my God, never.
And they're just ready, like naked in the bed.
If ever there were a deal breaker, dear audience, please know that if you walk into someone's home and they have a Qdoba candle, you should not feel bad about leaving. You should not. Empower yourself.
Brewery forced to drop reindeer orgy beer labels after anonymous Scrooge snitches.
I'm sorry, what? Like, okay, we need to unpack that because that headline has so many layers that are...
So, this is about the Sycamore Brewing Company, right?
Okay.
And they started teasing their release of its annual Christmas cookie winter ale.
Love
it's beer that tastes like Christmas cookies.
Sure.
Who wouldn't love it?
I can't tell if that's better or worse than the queso candle. Oh, my God.
And so they have this lovely can that's blue, and it has like a maple leaf on it, and it's very Christmassy. And in the background are these little pixelated reindeer fucking. In all different positions.
Okay, it's a drink for adults. You got to be 21 plus. So what's the problem?
Exactly. So people were all about it until somebody ratted them out, and the alcohol law enforcement had to get involved. I didn't even know that this.
I'm
was
sorry.
A thing.
Can we also talk about how that acronym is ALE? Alcohol law enforcement. That is so cruel. Oh my God! I love
they
that.
Had to go approach them and have a very serious conversation about illustrated reindeer sucking each other off.
Why? Who passed a law that said you can't have reindeer orgies on your beer?
Yes, it's apparently there's a rule prohibiting obscene material on like cans.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes, and they're gonna have to pay out like $500 to $1,000 fine.
That is absolutely preposterous. That right? is so ridiculous.
So in their statement, they say, we're in a moment in our country where the president is up for impeachment. There are school shootings. There's all this horrible stuff going on. And, you know, 7.5% beer that tastes like cookies with pixelated reindeer, that's a nice reprieve, I think, said Sycamore co-owner Justin Brigham.
All right, honey. Well, that was a reach. Like, it's like, there are school shootings. Let my beer be. I was like, we have enough. You know what I mean? Like, there's enough attention for all these issues at once. Look, I don't side with ale, the alcohol law enforcement, by any means.
Is really cute. I have to show it to you later because I can't turn the computer around right now. But the can is really cute. There's like a Rudolph is getting it doggy style, and one's doing reverse cowboy. It's really, really great. Are you looking it up?
I am. I googled reindeer orgy beer, and we'll see if that works. That'll be in my autocomplete from now on.
Well, Sycamore Brewing Company, I wish you the best of luck. And just so you know, Gabe Gonzalez and I are on your side.
I support.
Olive Garden released a Yule log style video of their new oven baked pastas.
Is the pasta burning in the fire? Wait, what? So it's just burning pasta.
So basically, everyone out there, you know that Netflix Yule log video that runs for forever. You could put it on and it either crackles or it'll play Christmas music for you. Well, Olive Garden, the brilliant people at Olive Garden, decided to make a similar video that runs for 8 hours of just their pastas baking in an oven.
Oh. I love that. Are you kidding? I would love to watch your pasta bake.
Could you imagine walking into someone's house for their Christmas party and on their television, that's what they have is just a video of like just pasta baking in the oven in the background.
Wait, I can't believe it's actually 8 hours and up on YouTube.
Yeah. Wait, 8 hours and 30 seconds.
That's like, that's bleak though. That is so bleak. Does the pasta change? Does it like rise?
I think it just bubbles and cracks.
Honey, I'm not seeing any change here. I'm at an hour 39, and this pasta looks exactly the same. I am a disappointed Olive Garden.
Look, they are all beautiful, cheesy masterpieces that this video shows off. The new smoked mozzarella shrimp rigatoni and the Asiago tortellini Alfredo with grilled chicken sit next to each other on what appears to be a grill, while the soothing sound of burning coals and bubbling cheese can be heard the whole time.
I will be fair, it is bubbling. Yeah. It is bubbling, but I'm not seeing the coloration change on the outside.
This is kind of like ASMR, I feel. Or mukbang.
Yeah, oh my god, right? Honestly, I would rather watch someone try to eat this dish for 8 hours. That would be much more fun. Give me a proper mukbang. Like a giant family-sized portion of this.
There's nothing better than a proper mukbang. Yeah. Are you into mukbang?
It is not my jam. I'm going to be honest. I don't like the sounds of people eating. I think it's disgusting. No.
There's this woman
like
with
ASMR.
Really long fingernails that all she eats is like shrimp and lobster and crap. And she's just like, it's all over her.
Oh, I can't do that.
I saw someone watching it on the train.
Yeah. Oh, my
God. This is what you watch on the train to work?
Okay, honey, if I can pause my porn consumption. Well, you know what? It's not really sexual, I guess. I don't know. I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. You know what I'm saying?
No,
like, if mukbang is your thing.
People get off to
it. It is a weird sexual component to it, isn't there? It's so strange.
And people have like ASMR boyfriends, and that's a whole nother episode too. Yeah. Like I did a ASMR episode, like that's episode 15 or something.
I'm just too loud for it. I don't think I would forget that I was doing ASMR and just start
screaming.
Fully. That's the Puerto Rican. Well, I think Puerto Rican ASMR is just speaking at an indoor volume. You know what I mean? Like that's Puerto Rican ASMR.
You think?
Yeah. I'm giving you Puerto Rican ASMR right now, okay? I could be louder. This is my whisper.
Oh, my God. Well, Olive Garden, we wish you the best of luck with these new pastas. And with that, I think this is a great way to end Food News Update. We do only the most important investigative reporting here, Gabe Gonzalez.
Truly.
You know? Put that on your mic.com.
Somebody call Cronkite. We've got another gay journalist on our hands.
All right, watch out. I'm coming for your gift. Oh, my goodness. So back to this food. Yeah. Do you cook a lot?
I do, but it's interesting. I don't really cook classic Puerto Rican food. I have elements that I was raised with. Like, adobo is what I used to season everything. I have a pilong in my kitchen. I do like to make mofongo from scratch. I like really enjoy doing that. Yes. That's really, it's hard, but it's so much
such
fun.
A pain in the ass.
Yeah, I'll do bistec y pollo empanado, so like kind of like a breaded chicken or steak kind of deal. I'm not very partial to yellow rice. Sometimes if I want to feel like I'm at home, but I was always a white rice kind of person at home. Yeah. But it's interesting, like, for example, if like I'm doing like, you know, a meal that I want leftovers for, what I might do is like white rice, black beans, I don't know, maybe like peas and carrots black or broccoli. Beans. I know, that's the other thing. It's like very strange because
black
it's like
black
beans are not Puerto Rican at all. It's like red beans and yellow rice was the like staple growing
up. Pigeon peas.
Yeah, pigeon peas, because it's like arroz con gandules was also that. It was those. That's it. Those were the only two things I was exposed to. And I think, I don't know, I have a very boring palate for a Puerto Rican, I want to be honest. Like, I don't like things, you know, that have a little too much kick to them, I guess. And I've always found black beans to be a little more laid back, you know what I mean?
Oh.
I am the most boring person in terms of, like, flavor profiles. Like, just give me, like, chicken, rice, black beans, some veggies in there. The well-seasoned chicken, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, I mean,
You'd be a terrible Puerto Rican if you didn't know how to season.
Oh, my God. Truly, truly, truly.
My friend Jennifer called me the other day, and she goes, I was thinking of you, and I oversalted the chicken.
Yeah.
She goes, I didn't want bland chicken.
Yeah, of course not. Are you kidding? No. I have been there, though. I have oversalted.
She literally goes, I didn't want that tasteless white people chicken.
Absolutely not. It's a sin. It's a cardinal sin.
Shout out to you, Jennifer, because I know you're listening. But it's because I don't eat like that anymore that I don't make it.
Yeah.
And I am feeling like almost like FOMO. I don't even know to call it FOMO or something that I don't know. I don't have those recipes under my belt.
Sure.
Like I have a ton of other recipes because I do cook a lot. That they're going to be lost once my mom's gone, you know?
Because
my mom was a single mom, so she would make... My mother makes the best motherfucking rice.
Yeah.
Because that white rice, so simple.
Yeah.
But you can pick up each grain, and it tastes like a meal.
Mm-hmm.
How does she do it? But because she was doing it every day, you know?
Like, well, that's the thing. It's like the kind of tricks that... Well, that's what's so interesting. It's like... I feel like once you have the basic grasp of the elements, you can know how to combine them. But everyone's always comes out different. And what I've noticed is that as things are passed on... Every person changes a su gusto, you know what I mean? The way they like it. And so I kind of love that. Like, there is a difference between my grandma, my mom, and my aunt's cooking, right? And, like, I love all of them, but they're definitely different. And there are dishes where I'm like, I'm going to ask her to make this one. You know what I mean? It's like that. It's that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's I think there is no wrong way, right? But there is a sort of, like, desire to preserve – the way it's been done before, or to sort of understand that
Even the recao and like all of that stuff, because my mother makes that in big batches, and then you freeze it, and then you have it forever.
Oh my God, of course, and like a Cracker Barrel tub or something like the Cracker Barrel butter tub.
Or crunchy why can't I speak today? Country crock.
No, that's what it was. Not Cracker Barrel. It was Country Crock.
Exactly.
I just, you know, I get all these Caucasian brands confused.
So funny. It's just, and I don't want that lost. And, you know, much like the coquito and pasteles. Are you a big pasteles person?
I am not a big pasteles person. I just did not. You know what I mean? I didn't really. I don't like the consistency of it.
Really?
It's kind of a running theme with me. It's like, I don't like pasteles. I don't like maduros or amarillitos.
Because they're squishy.
Yeah, I don't like that squishy vibe.
So out there, pasteles are Puerto Rico's answer to tamales, is what I say.
Pretty much, yeah.
Except for as tamales use corn masa on the outside. The Puerto Ricans are using root vegetables and plantains, like so yucca and very, very American yucca.
Yucca.
And platanos and all of that as the base. And so it comes out looking like a big rectangular poop.
Honestly, it does. Legit. And it's like sometimes they wrap in a, you know, the banana leaf. Yeah, and then you open it up and then it comes out looking, it's a tasty little turd, but it truly looks like a goddamn motherfucking turd. And right. I can't.
Rectangular.
I hate it.
And you put pique.
Uh-huh.
Hot sauce.
Yeah.
A little hot sauce. Mm-hmm.
It looks like blood on a poop. You know what I mean? It was deeply traumatizing. And then if you really want blood poop, you can have morcilla and you'll be fine, you know?
Oh my God. I don't, can you eat that? I can't eat that. Blood sausage.
Actually, really like, my grandfather growing up loved it, and he would mix it in with rice and chicken sometimes. Like, he would just make three different types of meats and rice, and you could serve yourself, and I would always put morcilla in with everything.
No, one day I was little, and I would, my grandfather had a farm, and I'd go down and feed the pig, the one pig every day, feed him mangoes and whatever else was out there. One day they sat me on the hill, and they tied the pig's leg to the tree, and two men and two women with the bowls, right? And they stabbed the pig's neck, right? Stabbed the pig in the neck, and they killed it, because that's what you do. You're on a farm. And I watched this whole thing happen. It was a life lesson.
My God.
And the women collected all the blood to make morcilla.
Right,
and we had they used the intestines. No part of the pig goes to waste. Not 1 ounce.
When I found out what morcilla was, because I fully believe I ate this for years without asking.
Oh,
I was like,
no.
This is great. When I found out what the fuck it was, I lost my shit.
In any form.
Yeah.
Black pudding, morcilla, any sort of blood sausage, I cannot. I just...
Yep.
No.
Yeah.
No. Do you celebrate Three Kings Day?
We did in my home every year. My mom still calls me. Oh my God, it was huge in my home. It was major. And then there was one Christmas. It was so funny. There was one Christmas we were in Puerto Rico, and the big mall there, Plaza Las Americas, has a Payless in it. And Payless in Puerto Rico used to give out shoeboxes, like themed after the Three Kings Day, with like the stories of the three kings for the holiday. Are you familiar with the whole tradition?
Yeah,
you leave the grass in the shoebox under your bed or at the front door or like wherever. And then you wake up the next morning and the camels have eaten the grass, and the three wise men, or the three kings, los Reyes Magos, as you say in Spanish, leave you a gift, right? For us, it was always like the chance for our parents to get us those extra things that they forgot about or were too expensive. So it was like I would get a Game Boy for Christmas and no game, and then Three Kings Day, I would get the game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was always like it was like a delayed. And then sometimes I would get like, but you always got three little gifts, right? And they were smaller in scale and obviously a little less ambitious than Christmas, because it's like, goddamn, like how are you gonna buy that many gifts? But it was I always looked forward to it. And my classmates were so jealous, because I would just get more gifts in January, and we'd come back and I'd be like, I got more gifts.
Yeah, my niece and nephew, my brother celebrates it with my niece and nephew now, which I love, but we never celebrated it growing up. Puerto Rico has like the longest Christmas in the world.
Oh my God, truly, fully believe that people clock out after Thanksgiving and do not come back to work until the El Reyes is over.
So my birthday is January 5th, and the story goes, because I was born 8 minutes to 8 in the evening, that my grandfather was yelling at my mother to hold in so I could be born on Three Kings Day.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Yeah. That's so wild.
But no, that didn't happen.
No, that's not.
And I was always chipped. Like Christmas and birthday were always together.
Oh my God, are you serious? Yep. People would just get you both?
Yep.
That's miserable. Yes. I hate that.
And my niece was born on the 1st. She's a New Year's baby, but they were going to induce on the 5th. And I said, no, I already don't have a birthday.
Yeah.
And she's not going to have a birthday either. So let us not have a birthday separately.
Yeah, let her stew for a little longer, right? Keep her in the oven.
No, but she came out on the 1st. Oh, my God. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's so fun reminiscing about this stuff.
Let the kids know where they can find you, any shows coming up, all the things.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So you can find me online on Twitter or Instagram using the handle Gaybones, GAYBONEZ. I have a show coming up January 3rd, I believe. It's called Open Flame. It's happening at Union Hall.
Union Hall.
Yeah, I love it.
But
I also
have like bocce ball there, don't they?
They do. It's the funniest thing. They have a comedy theater downstairs and bocce ball upstairs.
Yes.
It's an amazing vibe. They do some really cool shows there. I'm not hosting it. I'm a guest, but Open Flame is a lovely show that usually has queer comedians. I know, right? Yeah. And then I have a monthly show at Caveat called The Nerds and the Bees. It's about sort of online dating and how online dating apps seek to shape our behavior and change the way we interact with each other. So I have this like wildly brilliant co-host named Steve Dean, who is like so shy but such an expert on dating. He's worked as a dating consultant. And the things he told me about the way dating apps work are wild. It's so much fun. That's a theme for a different podcast. But that's what I am up to right now, and that's what I'm doing. So, yeah, find me online. See me live in New York. And then catch me on Christmas just stuffing my face in my grandma's kitchen.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Wait a minute. Before we go, before I exit out here, you used to edit porn.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was my first job out of college.
I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it was wild.
Merry Christmas, indeed.
I know. It is how I paid for my first plane ticket home after moving to New York. It was a wild gig.
How did that even happen?
Oh, honey, we're going to need another 45 minutes.
I know.
We're going to need another hour.
Love that. Antonio Biaggi or Rick York?
Actually, fully met Antonio Biaggi on set. He is Puerto Rican.
Yes.
We immediately bonded over that because everybody else on set was like a white English-speaking, full Caucasian gringo.
Yes.
And he is the biggest sweetheart. We actually ended up talking about food and going back home for Christmas. It was so much fun. Yeah.
I say if I was ever going to pay for sex, it would be with Antonio Biaggi.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, right?
You should let him know.
Yeah. Dear Antonio Biaggi.
Yeah.
Right? He used to have a blog.
I remember.
Right? Mm-hmm. It was interesting to
say. Oh, my God. Blogs were happening. You know, listen, blogs happen.
I still kind of have a blog out there.
Who doesn't?
Listen, I used to be a very important blogger in 2010.
Okay? Yes, LiveJournal. Yes.
No, it was Blogspot.
Oh, yeah. At that point, it was like Blogspot. Tumblr was kind of like a blog / artwork posting.
Ish.
Well, it wasn't really blogging. It was more just like a... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember if Tumblr was around when I started.
I just remember the big things when I got into college were those two sites. It was like Tumblr and Blogspot. Check out both.
Yeah.
What dark times we live in.
Yeah, I'm a little older than you. So. But listen, the face is still young. The face still
keep it fresh, honey. She's still fresh.
Listen, I want to thank you so much for coming.
Oh,
this
thank
was
you
so
for
much
having
fun
me.
And just so like great to relate to somebody, albeit a stranger, right? But like that I have so much in common with them. So many like, you know, things about our heritage, and to come together as, you know, queer Latinx, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, whatever word you want. Yeah, right?
just in that way, I think it's really, really special. So thank you for that.
Thank you. No, indeed. I appreciate it. It's been a blast. I've had so much fun.
You all out there, I hope you're getting your Christmas shopping done, or doing what you do, your Hanukkah, lighting your candles. Is it Hanukkah yet? I don't even know.
Actually, I do think Hanukkah may have just started, and it does overlap with Christmas a little bit. So it's going to be fun, yeah.
Well, whatever you do, I hope you're getting it done and you're not stressing out like I am. And with that, I want to thank you all out there for always listening to In Yo Mouth.